Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the News from the Front Lines. I am your host, and my name is Kristen Ann Flohr, and I will be delivering to you some voices from right from the war. The voices you guys are going to hear from are anywhere from people who have suffered the most and the hardest to those that could suffer the most and the hardest and to those that want to help. I just want to give a shout out to our media team, our help organize this show and help get you guys these voices from the front lines, who help us on a regular basis. Lori Baker, Mindy Griffith, Becca Nichols, Danielle Vitale O'Brien, and Mike Harris. I especially want to let you guys know that if it wasn't for them, this outlet for our prisoners and our defendants would not be here. So now I would like to introduce myself. My name is Kristen Flohr. I'm the Vice President for the Human Solution International. A lot of you know me as the person that might have sort of an outrage about what's going on in this world. And I've found a place here at the Human Solution where I can organize that outrage and put it to good use. So I am now the Vice President for the Human Solution International, and I work on a executive board of directors as well on a daily basis, trying to bring structure and a plan in order for us to actually end this war. Because when I first came to the war, there was a lot of, that is wrong, how can we do that, and what do you do about it? And throughout, after I met the Human Solution, after a few years, there is a plan now in writing and in place. The four of the board members, me, Eugene Fisher, Danielle Vitale O'Brien, and Joe Grumbine, worked the last 6 or 7 months on a business plan and a guide, a handbook that has policies and structures and a whole plan laid out to end the war. And so what's really extra special about this book and this guide is that there's four people who did it, all from four different parts of our country, and they all come from four different places. Our backgrounds are completely different, as like Eugene Fisher, who is actually going to be my co-host on the show today. Eugene Fisher is an ex-POW who spent over 26 years in prison for our plant. He was sentenced to life. In fact, I'm going to be doing a special interview with Eugene. We're going to be talking about what we've lost in the war, and besides our freedom and besides the people. You know, I always talk about, you know, I lost my dad, and that's, there's more to it than that. So we're going to talk about what Eugene lost. What he lost is what helped him get out. So that interview is going to be coming up shortly. So I also want to say, I want to go back to the handbook that I was just talking about. I want everybody, just if you can, to go to our website and take a look at it. There's a plan laid out. And if we follow this plan, you know, we are very certain that we will end the war. So I just want to invite everybody to follow the plan alongside of us to help end this war. I know Eugene Fisher backs the plan, and he was a POW. So if we got POW support on this, let's take it to the next level. Let's end the war against term time for our plan. It's in my head, it's over with yesterday, but we just have to put it into action so it will be over with. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce to you guys Eugene Fisher. And if you all know, of course, Eugene Fisher just didn't serve 26 years in prison, but he got out after a life sentence. So he was scheduled to die in prison. And had he not gotten out on, he's going to let us know a little bit about what got him out. But had he not got out, he would still be there. So we're really blessed to have this ex-POW right alongside of us, help guiding us through this war. Here's Eugene Fisher. Hi, Eugene Fisher, and good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, Christian. Hey, good morning, listeners. It's my pleasure to be on the show with you, Christian. You're a wonderful person, and you stimulate the best in people. And I want to just thank you for everything you're doing. It was kind of a destiny thing, Christian, that I believe it was my destiny to be able to win and get out of prison and to find a cause. The cause, of course, being our cause of doing away with prohibition and supporting prisoners. And this morning, you and I have talked, and you're gonna do an interview with me concerning one portion of what happens in the war on drugs, what happened to me and happens to everyone who's arrested for drugs, and that is concerning asset forfeitures. So I'm going to throw the ball back to you, and you can lead off, and if you wish to start the interview off, we can begin.
All right. Well, Eugene, I want to start the interview off because what I want our listeners to understand is, you know, when we're gone, we leave our families, and some of our family members leave us and they go into prison, and that's the major loss. And we always talk about that, but we never really talk about what else is lost. I want to remind everybody, you know, of course I say, you know, my father was lost, but they also took a lot from my father. They took houses, cars, all sorts of stuff, and they auctioned them off. And basically, it would have been all of my inheritance. Everything I would have inherited had they not taken my dad to prison and prosecuted him, raided him, I would have his house. I would have the house that my grandpa built. I would have the cars, and I would have the money. You know, they took a lot of money from my dad, and I would have those things now had they not stole them. But I didn't inherit those. I didn't inherit shit. Except for, you know, what my father left behind me, you know, which was a broken heart. But at the same time, he left inspiration, and he brought my soul to life. And that bringing me, making my spirit alive, that was much more than anything that I could have ever inherited that government took. So what you lost actually gained you back your freedom, Eugene. And it's amazing that you lost it, but yet at the same time, you used it to free yourself. Do you want to update our prisoners on some of the things that they took from you and how that affected your release?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about it, Christian. The thing they took, or they said they took from me, I didn't even own, but they still put it down as part of the forfeited properties. And this is a sinister part of what occurs, as you just described with your father. They'll lump everything together that you have and say, we don't care if you can defend it or not, that it's legitimate from legitimate earnings or not. You have forfeited it to the United States of America. And they have, it's like in our case, they actually had a separate bifurcated trial. It took 5 minutes, and they after 11 months of trial, it took them 5 minutes to say, we're going to forfeit from you and your three co-defendants an X amount of dollars. In our case, they said it was $180 million. How they derived it, it didn't have to be a specific amount, pointing to specific assets. They said that's a dollar amount that that they calculated. And the one witness that they had to calculate it was the FBI agent. He said, based on his experience, because his experience was prosecuting, we multiplied out the total amount of accused marijuana. And by the way, they never arrested us with any marijuana. It was all part of the conspiracy theory of theirs. And they said that's the amount. Now, in that amount of money, as our incarceration began to develop, they raised, one of my co-defendants was Ben Kramer, and they had a RICO trial against him in Fort Lauderdale. Apart, years later, after our basic trial and after we were doing prison time, they had another trial for him. And they found that there was a gambling casino in Los Angeles, outside of Los Angeles, actually, in Garden City, that they say was financed by drugs, that the marijuana involved in our case. Now, I'm going to make an admission, the same thing I told the government. I had nothing to do with that. That was my other three co-defendants, George Brock, my partner in shipping, and Randy Lanier and Ben Kramer were involved in that. But I wasn't. But they forfeited it anyway in my name. And I just described how they do that forfeiture. They don't even have to associate it directly. In our case, everything was conspiracy, and it wasn't based on any real marijuana they seized or arrested us for. This is what they said we conspired to import and distribute. Wow. Yeah, so all of a sudden, this club, I was alleged to have owned one half of one third of the club. And it became a huge club. Now, what I'd like to show you, just to show the listeners how these things work, and because this is going on even today. These assets get taken, get sold, and get the proceeds get distributed to police departments, but also there are assets that just are confiscated and become part of different law enforcement departments as they are. And this bicycle club was forfeited in the name of the four of us, and became property of the Marshals Service. You're probably familiar, Christian, with the Marshals Service.
Oh, and, definitely.
And they're given the responsibility, as you know, as happened with your dad, the responsibility of taking us to trial.
Now, those are bad people. They're not nice. I
agree with you, and yet I don't want to just label everyone, because every marshal isn't bad, but the service per se, and specifically in my case, in this case, here's what happened with that bicycle club. They were supposed to have taken it, sold it, and the proceeds would have gone to different law enforcement agencies. Well, what they did was they didn't sell it. They ran it. The U.S.
Wow.
Marshals ran the bicycle club.
And that was
Congress, the U.S., pardon?
That was a casino?
Yes, that was the casino. They ran the casino. It was a huge
wow.
casino. It was like 5,000 gambling tables. And it had a parking lot as big as Disney World.
Wow.
Yeah, they actually ran it, and they ran it for over 7 years. And
wow.
all the money that entered it, they just confiscated it, and it went not to the government alone. It went to marshals and people they assigned to run it and be involved with it. But here's a twist, Christian, that I want the listeners to know, and I can say it because there's no gag order on me or anything else like that, and it's the way I got my release, which I'll be glad to relate to you in a minute or so, and how it associates with the bicycle club associates with it. But the U.S. Senate investigated them twice and issued reports. The Committee on Forfeitures found that the marshals were involved in running the club where there was organized... Yes?
You guys, I'm getting a thing saying we have 10 seconds left on the show. For some reason, I don't think it was scheduled right, and we might be getting cut off. Please stay tuned. The rest of this will be continued shortly.
Okay.
Are you guys there?
Wait.
It says recording left. It says zero time. I just want to see if my listeners can hear me. It says that there is no more time left to it. It says our engineers are working on a solution for the audio file issue. In the meantime, a quick result. Okay, I don't know if this has anything to do with it or not, but Mindy said they can hear. Oh, they said that we can hear if they call in. Okay, so it seems like the show is still going on.
Okay, so they ran it, and they said there was organized crime, but the marshals were associated with organized crime. This is what the U.S. Senate said. They were involved with money laundering, and they were involved with extortion. The U.S. Senate said that. I didn't say it. The U.S. Senate said it twice, and that they should sell it, yet they didn't. And they took all this money, huge amounts of money in. And so I came along, and I saw this report, and there's a thing we call jailhouse lawyers, and I was kind of a jailhouse lawyer. These are guys in prison who dedicate some part of the time they're doing in prison to work in the law library and research and help other prisoners and help themselves. Well, there was a guy with me in Butner, North Carolina, in the medical facility. He had a bad heart. He was actually originally from California, Skip. And he was quite a jailhouse lawyer, and I knew I couldn't get any play in my original jurisdiction in southern Illinois. They were so totally, everything was fixed there. And there was no justice as far as I was concerned with any of my co-defendants. But he said, you know, you can probably get in the court in Washington, D.C., the U.S. Court of Federal Claims. So I prepared a brief myself, and I sent it there. I sent a motion to the U.S. Court of Federal Claims. The judge there, a lady judge, Miller, looked at my motion, asked the government for a reply, and they couldn't reply. I said, you took this in part in my name, so any proceeds you've made in the time you've run this bicycle club and anything you might realize in the sale of it should be credited to me and my forfeiture. And I said, by my reckoning, there was $10 million over any forfeiture amounts you had against me that you collected. So you owe me $10 million. And I wanted my freedom more than anything else. I didn't expect I'd get a penny from the government, knowing how the government functions. But I had the suit out there, and she found that my case had merit. The government couldn't answer it. She said, unfortunately, I don't have jurisdiction here. Jurisdiction meaning the motion couldn't properly go before her. But she said, I recommend that you go to trial back in where your trial, original criminal trial, was. This was a civil suit I was filing. Everyone was told me that with a civil suit, I couldn't do anything on my criminal case. But I filed it anyway. They put it back in the court, and a pro bono attorney that I had over the years, I lost my money and so on, and a pro bono attorney, Steve Chauvet out of Chicago, and his sister, Tina, became my close friends. And I said, I got this suit now in front of the court, and they've scheduled it for trial. Can you help me? So they stepped into the case. Again, I did all the initial work. And when they had to schedule a trial date, well, as we approached the trial date, we asked for what was called discovery, which means that they turn over the documents pertaining to the case. And the answer they had to my pro bono attorney was, Mr. Schobert, there are 500,000 documents involved. Fisher can't expect to get them. And my attorney said, oh, yes, he can, and he wants them. So
wow.
within days of this happening, Christian, the court, all of a sudden, not the court, excuse me, the government, and it was a civil suit, so the same U.S. attorney who prosecuted me criminally was not involved. It was another guy. And he went to my attorney and said, if Fisher drops the suit, we will release him. Well, within 1 week of that moment,
so basically,
I was a free man.
Wow. How long did it take? You said 2 weeks?
This was in my 25th year of incarceration. I'd worked continuously. I had probably hundreds of motions I'd filed and everything else, many of them meritorious. They got turned down. I never got anywhere. But this process took approximately 1 year from the time I began filing my suit to my eventual release. It was so surprising. Wow. Everything ended up, Christian, happening within 1 week. Of course, they had me drop the amount I was suing for and actually say that I owed them that money. That's what they made me sign an agreement to. At that point, my attorney, my family, my friends, everyone said, tell them whatever they want, they'll release you. So I did, and I was released, and that's how I ended up being part of the Human Solution. Being free, and a lady called Adela brought me into the program originally, and I met Joe and you all, and I began this whole process. But the point I wanted to make about forfeited properties is it's an incentive for law enforcement to prosecute criminal cases in the drug war, and specifically marijuana cases, because they end up making money on these things, and it goes to their agencies. And in some cases, such as what I accused, because remember, we never went to court, we never did the trial, but my accusation was they were actually benefiting money-wise, the U.S.
Wow.
Marshals, in my case, in the case of the Bicycle Club. But it was a blessing. And the argument, they asked me, they said, well, how can you, if you claim you weren't part of it, how can you make this claim? I said, well, you told me I was, just like I told you I wasn't innocent. I wasn't guilty of what you were accusing me of. I wasn't guilty of owning that, but you said I did, and you forfeited it in my name. So that was determined by you. And it was a blessing, and that's how I actually won my release. But it happens, Christian, over and over. It happens to people, for example, if they're carrying money in the car and they get stopped, that money, without any direct association to any criminal activities that can make the accusation, it's large
right.
amounts of money, and it can
just
be
even
it can be drug
it.
Money.
Yeah, just to even know about something is conspiracy, just to even know that the money was in there, whether you had anything to do with it or not, or to not even know it was there. Like,
that,
they want to say and do, they will. It's very,
and
very,
in fact,
very...
In fact, in a car that the drugs are found, that even if the driver and owner of the car knew nothing of the drugs, or, for example, knew nothing about a pistol being concealed on someone in this car, that vehicle can be and is confiscated many times.
Right.
And it goes into this forfeiture business, and it's some people get their property back, but generally speaking, probably 90% of the things forfeited are never returned.
Wow.
So like you said about your dad and so many other people I've known, not only do they incarcerate us and sometimes kill people, such as they did with your father, but they also make sure that they take all goods and money things that are owned by that person.
I would love to get some of the things back that they took from me and my family. I had my dad wanted to leave me things that was left for my great-grandmother, you know, that the feds took that I'll never get back. Family heirlooms and antiques and stuff that they took. So, you know, they just basically robbed us and stole from us until they took everything possible, living, bare, period. So, Eugene, I want to let all of our callers know that we are experiencing major technical difficulties with our radio show. I scheduled it for the first time, and I scheduled it looks like for 15 minutes. And so what will happen is the show allows us to go 1 hour over that. So we have approximately 45 minutes. However, after the show goes into overtime, we cannot get any more callers. So anybody trying to call in will not be able to get through. We did have an interview set up with Bill Levine, who is a spiritual leader for the First Church of Cannabis. And that interview was scheduled in at 10 o'clock. However, we're going to have to postpone that for next Sunday. So if any of the listeners wanted to hear that interview, that's not going to take place today. We are going to talk to Craig Cecil, who's going to call in about 5 minutes. And I've got a message that says nobody can hear this and that this is not being recorded. So, Eugene, I don't know. I think we're going on a radio show that nobody can hear. Is that?
I can hear you.
Hold on. I'm going to take a caller from. I'm going to take a caller from a good friend of mine and see if they can hear me. Kitty Miller, can you hear me? Hello? All right, Eugene. I don't think we are. I definitely think we might be wasting this now. I think we might have to do this show next week because, yeah, no callers are calling.
Yeah, if we can't be heard, Christian, maybe we ought to just call it off for the day.
Okay. Well, I've got Craig calling in, so I'm going to talk to everybody later. Thank you, everybody, if you can hear me, for listening to the news from the front lines. And I'm going to talk to Craig and let him know what's going on, and I'll touch base with everybody in a few minutes.
Okay. We'll just keep talking. I wanted to just announce a couple of things, too, Christian, while we're waiting for people to call. The prison community, people that have done time together, is a very close-knit one. We form some friendships that are lifelong friendships and relationships. And I contacted in the last week or so by a fellow called Steve Miller. He wasn't a prisoner, but he became a friend, and he's a success story. He's involved in nutritional things. He married a lovely lady called Kat.
Eugene, this is Mindy, hon. I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off, but there's only three people right now that can hear you. That's you, me, and Danielle.
Okay.
It's not recording. It's not recording, and nothing is happening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just the four of us on the line right now.
Okay. Danielle, how's the wedding going? How's the wedding going? Give us an update.
The wedding?
Yes, your daughter's wedding.
Oh my gosh, it was absolutely beautiful. It went without a hitch, and it was beautiful.
Wow.
And you know what's so crazy, and they did not do this. They're on the fence post there. Someone had carved TKTK and had little hearts on each side, and that's their initials now. They're both their Taylor and Tyler Kilby or whatever. And, yeah, they didn't put it up there, and they were all amazed. And, you know, so I don't know if one of their friends did it and didn't fess up to it, but it looked really old, like it's been there for a long time. So we took that as a little sign. It was really beautiful, though. It was right by this waterfall.
Congratulations, my dear. From us all,
yeah.
Heartfelt congratulations. I know it's a big deal when your daughter gets that old that she gets married, but remember this, you got a new son now.
Exactly. That's the thing, and he's a great, great kid. So, yeah, we're happy to have him. And, yeah, it's a whole new phase here. We're getting into their house shopping, and, yeah, it's it'll be fun. But, yeah, and we got to see a lot of people we hadn't seen in a long time. And
right.
The caterer,
right.
Some guy we went to high school with we hadn't seen in 15, 20 years, you know. It was neat. So, and, boy, she went on the Internet, you guys, and she went on that Pinterest site and It's Eugene. It's where people just put up random pictures of things they love, and you go on and you type in weddings or backyard weddings, you know, and stuff, and they have a million pictures from all around the world. And she hit that website, and she got so much stuff done just absolutely for free from watching that. Like, she went around my house, and all my apple juice jugs and my jars that I save like a hoarder, she went and filled them all with baby's breath and candles, just beautiful. And, you know, like, she really did it on a dime. And, yeah, I was so proud of her when I saw how beautiful it was. She had their backyard all lit up, and it was really nice. So, yep, we made it through. But, yeah, I don't sound the best today because I was doing a lot of talking and, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And then I woke up real early this morning and said, oh, boy, this is just too early. And then I fell asleep, and then I accidentally slept longer than what I meant to. So I woke up to this radio show like, oh, no. And, man,
well,
I want
you girls to know I'm trying to get, for next week maybe, an interview with Mark Varka, who is the head of FedCure, which is one of the predominant organizations, marijuana organizations, but working to get federal legislation changed, different than what we're doing. And I knew Mark for 30 years. I sold him a ship way back before my incarceration, and I know him and his father. And this is quite an organization. I'm reaching out to him now. He reached out to me, and I'm trying to get back with him so we can maybe organize an interview with him, and who knows, maybe end up working with FedCure. They've got a real good board of directors, and they're an interesting organization. So hopefully we can get that done for next week. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Sure.
I think we lost voice. Is that anyone there still?
Here. Yep. It should be. I don't know. Is Kristen still on?
Kristen, Mindy, are you still there?
Yeah.
I'm here.
Mindy and I are here. I don't hear Kristen anymore, though. She might.
I went ahead and popped on the radio show page and let everybody know that we'd be back next week.
Oh, cool.
What caused it, Mindy? Can you tell us?
Kristen took the blame, but I don't know if it's Kristen or not.
Well,
Blog Talk had an error this morning that I don't know if that had anything to do with us or not.
One thing is that I wonder if that our engineers are working on a solution for the audio file issue. Like, I don't know if somebody from our end, like, sent a thing saying we were having an issue and that's their answer to us, or if that's just a general, like, everybody across Blog Talk's getting that today. And then, two, how could she have set it for 15 minutes because it's a 120-minute show? Did she set it for 12 minutes? Is that what happened? Is that how long we got? I wasn't looking at the counter when you guys started saying, I had just stepped out back, and I heard her say, it says we have 10 seconds, and I was like, oh, no, and I came running.
Can you get a screenshot of that error message, Daniel?
Yeah.
That way, because if this is